Hello there, I hope you're well. Welcome back to the True Travel Podcast with me, Laura Sanders. Travel restrictions in the UK are finally starting to ease again and many of us are planning a sunny getaway for 2022. With that said, I've got guidebook writer Rebecca Hall on this week to talk all things Greece. Originally from London, Rebecca has travelled all over the world, but Greece has always had a special place in her heart. She moved there after graduating from university to teach English. That was until a Rough Guides author read her blog. She now regularly contributes to guidebooks, travel magazines and blogs, as well as still teaching English on the side. And she's calling me today from her home in Athens. Rebecca's going to tell us about some of the dreamy hidden gems worth exploring in Greece during this episode. So sit back, relax and get inspired. As always, remember to hit subscribe so you know when new episodes are coming out. You can also follow the True Travel Podcast on social media to see the latest from my guests from around the world. Enjoy. So thank you so much for joining me today, Rebecca, from lovely sunny Greece, which you say isn't so sunny at the moment. It's cold. You just finished writing some or updating some guidebooks, haven't you? So you seem to be the person to come to for some information on Greece. What got you into all of that initially?
I have been on and off in Greece because I go between Greece and the UK, COVID permitting. I came here about, I think it's 12 years ago now. I initially came to teach English. After I left university, I went to university as a mature student and I wanted to integrate into a culture. And I thought the best way to do that was to live in a remote village and teach English. And I've always had a bit of a history with Greece, which we can come to. So I came to Greece initially to teach English, and then through my teaching, I became an English examiner for Cambridge, and I examined with a rough guide author. You examine in pairs, and the rough guide, I had started a blog at that stage, and he saw my blog and he showed it to his editor at Rough Guides, because they were short of a guidebook updater that particular year, way back in 2014, and she contacted me and she said, we've seen you've got an online presence, we've seen that you know Greece, are you interested in interviewing for this role as a Greece guidebook updater? Which I was, and because of my knowledge of being in the country, I got it that I got the job to update the guidebook back in 2014. Rough Guides update their guidebooks every 3 years. So it kind of just went from there. And the more I started having that on my CV, that kind of kickstarted my CV, that and my blog really kickstarted my CV. And I started getting freelance travel writing opportunities and it kind of snowballed from there.
That's amazing. So before we get any further then, you said you had a history with Greece. So what do you mean by that?
My dad used to work a lot with Greeks. He was involved in shipping. And he used to help, he was what's known as a broker, and he was at sea many, many years ago, and then he sort of fell into buying and selling ships, brokering. It's got a very huge shipping industry in Greece. So he had a lot of Greek clients, and one of his clients became my godfather, which is a very important role in Greek society. If you're the godfather of a child or the godmother, it's a really important role. So we used to come to Greece a lot on holiday when I was a young kid. And I remember every year coming to Greece on holiday. And after I finished my university travels, I traveled a lot to many other different countries, including Sri Lanka as a volunteer, etc. I thought, why not go to Greece and just try and relive almost a little bit of my childhood memories? And I just found myself staying. I just fell in love with the country so much, with the people, not just the aesthetics of the country. A lot of people think Greece and they think Santorini, Mykonos, all these beautiful blue seas, etc. I just fell in love with the culture of the country and the kindness of the people. They're just very, very kind people. It's a complete anathema to the culture in the UK. I love the UK, don't get me wrong, but I just find it very, very, it takes ages to get to know someone, for example. And I find in the UK, people need to drink a lot in order to relax. Whereas in Greece, people just seem to be naturally relaxed and very, very friendly. And there's not this kind of drink culture or this binge drinking culture, which I've never really been into. And I felt like I suited the Mediterranean lifestyle. And I'm sure it's weather related. It's definitely climate and weather. People in Greece can sit down and nurse a coffee for 3 or 4 hours, just one coffee. And then, you know, they're not told by the cafe they have to move on or order another coffee. And it's just a very, very relaxed lifestyle, a very family community lifestyle. And that's what really suited me. Greece became like a family to me. The whole country became like one big family to me. And I think I fell in love with it.
That's lovely to hear. It's fascinating that you've been to lots of other places in the world, and it's almost like Greece is a second home to you, and now it is your home. Where else did you travel before eventually landing in Greece? You mentioned Sri Lanka there.
I spent some time researching for my university dissertation in Cambodia. I spent a year... my very first solo trip was when I was 19. I went to Australia for a year on a working holiday visa, and I went to where else have I been? I've been to the States a fair bit, and I've been to mainly a lot of places in Europe, and just I keep being sucked back into Greece. I just kept being sucked back here, I think. But yeah, I always figured if I was going to settle somewhere, it would be much further abroad than Europe. But I think I found my anchor in Greece.
That's great. We all have that special place in the world, don't we, that we could just keep going back to. So whereabouts in Greece are you living? Where are you based?
Well, I started in a really small village in the middle of nowhere in the mainland. The nearest probably well-known place to that village was the archaeological site of Delphi, which is known as the navel of the universe, navel being the centre of the universe. So I was based near there, but now I live in Athens, which is, for a capital city, is probably like one very big village in its mentality. You've got neighbourhoods with street markets every different days of the week, and I love just going to the street markets in different neighborhoods in Athens and just wandering down them. So
that's lovely. And I take it you can speak Greek as well?
Not fluently, unfortunately. I'm very embarrassed whenever I speak with an accent, and my vocabulary, I'm getting there. The problem with Greek is grammar. It's a bit like, you know, with French, everything is a he or a she, a masculine or a feminine. It's the same with Greek. In English, he and she is just male and female people or animals. And then anything like a chair or a table is an it. Whereas in Greek, a table is a he, I don't even know what it is. It's a he or a she, or so an object has a he or a she attached to it. And there's just no way I'm ever going to know these nouns or objects, whether they've got... you know, whether they've got he or she attached to it, unless I really sit down and spend time having proper lessons, which I should do. But I kind of picked it up by osmosis. I hear it and I memorize it and I learn it. What I am lucky to have, apparently, even according to the Greek people, is I'm lucky to be able, when I do speak limited Greek, I have a good accent, apparently.
So you may not be saying it right, but what you do say, it sounds nice and a good accent.
Okay.
You know, I was having flashbacks.
Yeah.
I was having flashbacks to my French lessons when you were talking about masculine and feminine there. It's a night I could never get my head around it either.
Yeah.
I think a lot of European languages are the same. But it's just one of those things, I guess. But great that you've soaked up some of the language, and I guess you can get by. That's the main thing. But yeah, fantastic that you're living in Athens now, and you've done a lot of work on the Greek islands as well, haven't you, for the Rough Guidebook? So just talk me through those a bit. Where have you been to, and what have been some of your favourite islands?
Well, for the Rough Guide, basically Greek islands, there's over a thousand Greek islands. So a lot of people think the main islands are, like I say, Santorini, Mykonos, Kos, or Rhodes, or all these different places. But there's hundreds and hundreds, over a thousand Greek islands. So there's many tiny Greek islands, and they're all grouped into chains. So the chain of islands that I cover for Rough Guides is called the Dodecanese chain. And the Dodecanese, the main islands in there, which people will probably have heard of and probably even been to, is Kos and Rhodes. So they both have airports on them, which is, so they're a little bit more package holiday. So I prefer to go to the small, so I go there to start my research, but then I tend to go to the much smaller islands around these, places like Simi, which maybe some of the listeners will have heard of. It's beautiful. It's a very, very beautiful island. It's a kind of like very Venetian style. It was taken over by the Italians in the Second World War. So it's got kind of like a very Venetian architecture. So a lot of the smaller islands I go to and research there. So yeah, the Dodecanese Islands, very, very beautiful.
Sounds fantastic. I'm picturing the blue seas in my head as you're speaking. So over the past few years, obviously, I think over here in the UK, definitely, there's been a lot of sort of negative stuff in the news about Greece, or not negative, but they've had an economic crisis and all sorts of things happening. Of course, COVID as well, which has hit everybody, not just Greece. So how have you found living in Greece during this time? And is it as... I don't want to say serious or negative, or is it like it's been portrayed in the news over here, if that makes sense? Like, what have you witnessed having lived in the country?
I think take it one bit by bit. So first of all, with the financial crisis, yes, the newspapers tended to, I think, there was no doubt there was a financial crisis, but it wasn't just hitting Greece. And a scapegoat was needed, and Greece was just a very handy scapegoat. And then you started seeing all these headlines in the very tabloidy press about how, oh, Greeks are lazy because they don't do this, they don't do that. And I'm thinking, what, you're calling a Greek lazy because they spend 3 hours drinking a coffee? Try and understand the lifestyle a bit more. Maybe a Greek would call an English person, maybe a Greek would say all English people are drunks because they go out on a Friday night and get completely drunk. It doesn't mean all English people are drunks. So I was very angry, actually. It's interesting you bring this up, because I was very angry at what I was reading in the press. Even in non-tabloid newspapers, I was really quite surprised at the news that they were portraying. So that's when I set about to try and write my novel. And I started writing my novel in the middle of the crisis and finished it after the crisis ended. It's called Girl Gone Greek. And it's basically about this girl who comes to Greece and falls in love with Greece and stays. And the purpose of the novel was to try and help people see through a different lens what the country was about, and to try and fall in love with the culture of the country. And it was humorous as well, and to laugh at the people. I'm not a political writer. I didn't want to start writing political columns in like The Economist or anything like that. But I thought, you know what, maybe if I could reach a wider audience and write a lovely novel about Greek culture, Greek society, Greek food, Greek people, maybe it would make people fall in love with Greece and see the real Greece, or the Greece that I know. And then, yes, coming to COVID, we've actually had very, very strict rules. So even now we have to wear masks outside, for example. Now, a lot of people, a couple of friends in the UK have said, oh, you've got really draconian rules. But then I say to them, OK, I know you can't compare like for like, but look at our COVID numbers compared to your COVID numbers. And maybe there's something to be said for these strict rules. And for much longer than the UK, we've had to present a COVID pass before we go inside anywhere, for example. And that's been happening since, I think since November last year, 2021. So it's been going for a long time. And in the height of the COVID crisis, we weren't allowed out of our houses anytime we went anywhere, we had to send an SMS message. And we had reasons why we were going places. So we either for a walk in the street, or to the supermarket, or if you were a single parent and taking your child to its other parent. So you had to have a reason why you were leaving. It sounds really draconian, but basically it was kind of just restricting people's movements from having too many people in one area. And it seems to have worked, because touch wood, and I will touch wood, the COVID numbers seem to have been less, I'm not saying that they're not there, but less here than there seem to have been, well, definitely within the UK.
Yeah, and actually, I remember covering it at the time, I think Greece was one of the first countries to start opening back up to tourism after the first, you know, initial lockdown. I know the Greek Prime Minister was very keen to, you know, do what he could to get tourists in, to introduce a COVID pass, and all of that. He was definitely one of the first ones to make the move on it, which just shows, you know, A, how well they've handled it, and B, how much also Greece relies on tourism and is considering the tourism industry, which is good. But yeah, we moved on very nicely to your novel there. So I take it this novel is semi-autobiographical by the sounds of it. Just tell me a little bit more about it.
Yeah, so you summed it up really well, actually. Yes, it is semi-autobiographical. I don't want to use real names, real places, etc., to kind of protect identities, etc. But basically, as I say, the emphasis of wanting to write it in the first place was because of this anger I felt at seeing Greece portrayed in this way that we you and I had discussed earlier, in this way that the Greeks were lazy and it was their fault there's this European financial crisis. So I thought, no, I wanted people to see a different side of Greece and to be attracted to the Greece that I knew and had come to fall in love with in my time staying here. So I wrote it. It took me a long time, and because it's semi-autobiographical, it took a lot of soul searching, because I had to write the backstory of why the character chose to come to Greece in the first place. And it's, you know, it's almost, it was almost like a one long psychology session. So there was a real lot of digging deep and having to think of, having to really kind of be honest with myself as well. I think I really need to kind of expose here a little bit about my background or the character's background and what she's been through and what actually brings her to Greece, etc. And ultimately what the country has done to help her as a person. So it sounds like a self-help novel. It's not really. It's got very funny elements to it as well, because the Greeks are real characters. It's about how it's a fish out of water story, if you like, a foreigner in Greece and the things that she finds funny, which Greeks would probably think are just normal everyday occurrences. Why would a foreigner find that funny? So it's just highlighting cultural differences. And just because we are from different cultures doesn't make us... It makes us different. It doesn't make us wrong. I think that's my key point here. Cultures have differences and it doesn't make them wrong. It just makes them different, and it makes them probably even quirky and likeable.
Absolutely. Totally agree with you there. It's something I talk about a lot with my podcast guests, with the countries they've been to and, you know, embracing differences and different cultures. And it's what makes travel interesting, the fact that everybody's different, I think. So yeah, that's great. When's that due out?
It's out now. It's been out for a while now. It's on Amazon. So it's Girl Gone Greek, and you can get it from Amazon. It has been it was written into a film script, which won two, the script itself won two industry awards, the 2018 London Greek Film Festival and the 2020 Santorini Film Festival. So whether it gets made into a film, who knows? That side of things is very long and complex and giving me a headache, but let's see. Or whether it gets turned into a TV miniseries, particularly on, on digital channels like Netflix, Amazon, Apple Plus, all these digital channels are always looking for things. So you never know. I think it could be very good. And particularly because Greece, Laura, now, Greece is really offering incentives to foreign film initiatives to come in, and it's offering tax breaks for people to actually film here. There's been a lot last year, and particularly this year, there's a lot of filming happening in Greece.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, congratulations, first of all. I didn't know it was already out and that it had been turned into a film script. That's incredible. And secondly, no, I didn't know that about Greece. So we could be seeing a lot more Greece-based films in the next couple of years then, which isn't a bad place to have a film setting, is it? I think a lot of the listeners now would be picturing Mamma Mia or something like that as we're talking about it, but fantastic stuff. So let's talk about some of your favourite spots in Greece then. You know it very well. Are there any real off-the-beaten-path gems that you could tell us about?
One of my favourite places actually is in central Greece. It's in a province or an area of Greece in the centre called Florina. The village is called Nymphaeo. And in Nymphaeo, there is a bear and wolf sanctuary that rescues. There are actually bears in central Greece. Or mainland Greece, and also up towards northern Greece and in the Balkan regions. And they have a sanctuary there for rescued bears. So basically, when there's sort of infrastructure happening and carrying on in the area, maybe the mother bear gets knocked down by cars or a car or something, and the baby bears lose their mother. So along comes the NGO, which is called Arcturus. Arcturus is Greek for the Great Bear, like in the sky, the star formation of the Great Bear. And they come along and they take the bears in and they put them in their they've got a big, huge natural habitat area, which is fenced, and the bears can roam free and can rehabilitate. And the same with wolves, some of the wolves there.
Oh, amazing. That sounds really fascinating. And you know, you do have to be very careful, don't you, with like animal tourism when you're abroad. But that sounds like it's doing some worthwhile work there. And it's great that you can go and visit and have a look, which is fantastic. What are some of the other highlights then from your days in Greece? Where else do you love to visit?
I like to go to some of the smaller islands, some of the less touristy islands. For example, like I say, Symi is one of my favourites. As you come into the harbour, there's no airport there. So some of the islands that don't have airports because it's less package holiday, you would fly into Rhodes, and then you get a ferry from Rhodes to Symi for about 45 minutes, and you come into the harbour, and it's literally, you've got these kind of Venetian-style houses spilling down in from the mountain into the harbour. It looks beautiful. Literally, people run out onto the ferry to take pictures, and the ferry almost kind of tips because all the people are desperate to take photos. So Symi is one such place. Corfu, even though Corfu is very, very touristy, once you get out into the mountainous areas and some of the non-touristy areas, it's beautiful. So I like, it sounds almost a bit snobby, it's not meant to, but I like going where the tourists don't. I like going where Greek tourists go. And then it forces me actually to try and practice my Greek as well, what little Greek I do have. So some of the non-touristy areas of the touristy islands, and yeah, just, you know, small islands. Like there's a few islands off the Greek coast, off the Athens coast, and not a lot of people know about them. There's one called I'm just trying to think, what's its name? Poros is a lovely island. A lot of people think in order to go to Greek islands, you have to go to, you know, spend hours on a ferry, or you have to go to the Santorini or this, that and the other. But there are some islands that are only 45 minutes away by ferry, and they're really, really beautiful. And they're local islands, so really only the locals go to them.
Yeah, and the beauty of that, I totally agree. I like to sort of get off the beaten path a bit and find unique spots that aren't completely overridden with tourists. No offence to tourists, but, you know, we are tourists as well. Yeah, totally. I've heard that. And I imagine as well, the lesser known islands, you're going to get more of an authentic Greek experience. Probably more of a welcome because they don't see many tourists. It's probably a little bit cheaper as well. Am I right in thinking all of those?
They get more kind of like Athenians, so people from Athens, or they get more Greek tourists. So it's just, I think definitely the authenticity is there. People tend to, they treat you like they treat anyone else. There is another island that I thought of is called Idra. Idra is off the coast of Athens, and it is quite touristy, actually. It's quite well known, but it's not got too many tourists, and it actually has no transport on it. So there's no motorized vehicles except the fire truck and the refuse truck. So the only way to get around is to walk on the island or to use mules. Sometimes the mules can help take your luggage to your accommodation. So yeah, a lot of these islands they cater to some tourists, but more to Greek tourists, let's say. But it's just lovely being part of the atmosphere and part of the natural culture.
Yeah. Not like you say, not so over saturated with tourists that it doesn't even feel like Greece anymore, which I absolutely hate. And it's all good for sustainability as well, isn't it? If we're spreading the tourism out more, if people are visiting more off the beaten track places, it spreads that wealth, it spreads people out, it reduces the impact on one place, I think. So I think it's great to go and explore some of these other places. And I can imagine as well, if you find a really remote little island, it feels like you're the only person in the world, and who wouldn't want that?
For sure. It's nice to, like I say, it's good to be, I think, respectful of, well, wherever you go, I think it's good to be respectful of the people and the culture and try to learn. Even, and I take my own advice with this, learn as little as of the language as you can, even if it's please and thank you and what to order on a menu, because people really do appreciate that. Luckily, in my years here, I can definitely do that.
I can imagine. Yeah, no, I totally go by that rule myself. I went to Turkey a couple of months ago, and I just learned hello, please and thank you, and even that just goes a really long way, doesn't it? And you can have a giggle as well at pronouncing it wrong and asking people how to say it properly. It's an icebreaker if anything as well, and like you say, it goes a long way, just that little bit of effort. So for somebody looking to book a holiday in Greece this year, who wants to get off the beaten path, who wants to see something a little bit different or discover something about Greece that perhaps isn't as spoken about, where would you recommend they look to go?
I would say some of the smaller ones. So fly into Athens, don't overlook Athens completely. Stay in Athens for maybe 2-3 days and do some things such as the street art tours. There's some amazing, since, funny enough, the financial crisis, there is some amazing street art, not graffiti, but street art. And the murals across some of the neighbourhoods in Athens are amazing. So do something different, like a street art tour. There are some tours out there that you can do that take you to the different neighbourhoods and show you and explain the background for some of the street art. And also, maybe another day you could do a gastronomy tour. So a tour around the city, and it takes you beyond what I call the moussaka. You know, you can really try proper Greek food and get to understand some of the good Greek food that's out there. And then maybe hop on a ferry, go down to Piraeus, the main port, and hop on a ferry and go to any of the islands that are located near Athens. So, I don't know, maybe Poros or Spetses. Spetses at the moment is where a lot of film companies come and film, funnily enough, because it's near Athens and they can make it look, it's all very authentic. So Poros or Spetses or Idra, as I said to you, which is quite unique because it just doesn't have any cars at all on it, any motorised vehicles, or just some of these tiny islands near Athens, or head down to the Athens Riviera, which is about 45 minutes from the centre. Athens is blessed to actually be by the sea as well. So the Riviera is along the coast there. They are developing it in a very, very sustainable way so that it's going to kind of attract more people. One of the places along the Riviera, which is lovely, is a place called Vouliagmeni Lake. It's a lake, basically, it's a natural spring lake, which has got fresh and seawater in it. It's about 25 Celsius all year round. And so the water you can swim in all year round. And it has these tiny little, I think it's called Gararufa, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, sorry, these little black fish that swim around. When you go in, they nibble the skin from you, any of the skin that needs to be removed. So they live there naturally. So you're swimming around and all these kind of little tiny black fish are there. They're about the size of tadpoles. It's a really, really unique place to go. And in the evening, sometimes they have concerts there, like, you know, on classical concerts. So it's a really unique experience.
Oh, wow. It sounds it. I've seen those big glass tanks on holidays in Spain and stuff with those fish in, and people line up to dunk their feet in. It creeps me out a little bit, to be honest. But I'm sure it probably isn't as bad if you're having a nice swim in a lake and it's all natural rather than it being in a big glass tank on the side of the street. But that sounds very unique, and you're giving people a good range of activities there, probably things that they haven't thought of. And me personally, if I go to it, particularly on a city break, I love to do a bike tour with a local guide, because they show you all the back streets and the little off the beaten path bits, as well as, you know, the main attractions. So a bike tour is always good as well, I recommend. But yeah, it sounds amazing. So looking ahead to 2022 then, Rebecca, what have you got lined up for yourself? Have you got any more excursions in Greece? Are you hopefully traveling overseas anywhere? What have you got planned?
There's a couple of Peloponnese trips that I'll be going to. Peloponnese is a region of Greece that is just below Athens, and it's linked to the mainland either by a bridge to the north or to the south. It's linked by the Corinth Canal. So it's called an island on the mainland type thing, because it's only linked by a bridge or a causeway. So I'll be going to maybe do some research there of different hotels, different places to visit there. I'm hoping to go back to Italy. I spent some time in Florence last year and fell in love with the area, and did a day trip to Bologna. So I've been invited to go and maybe spend some time a bit longer in Bologna this time. So yeah, Italy and Greece I see is quite similar in a way. But yeah, like I say, Florence I fell in love with, and maybe even get the opportunity to go and spend a few days in Dubai, get to see some of the cultural activities there.
Lovely. You're definitely a sunny weather traveller, I can tell by the destinations you've listed there. It sounds like you've got plenty in the pipeline there. That's great. And hopefully we can all get back to some more traveling this year. But in the meantime, it's been great speaking to you, Rebecca, and I look forward to seeing what happens with your book. I'll keep my fingers crossed that we do eventually see it as a film or a TV series. You never know. And yeah, look forward to seeing what you write next.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure talking to you and being able to promote this country that basically I've taken into my heart. I feel like I've been adopted. I feel like it's one big family that's adopted me. And if I can give back to this country by, you know, sustainably promoting it and helping other people see the beauty of this country, then that's what I really want to do.
That's fantastic. That's a really amicable goal, and I'm sure plenty of people will fall in love with Greece and perhaps put it on their holiday list this year, having heard this. But yeah, thank you so much. It's been lovely speaking to you too, and hearing all about what you've been up to in Greece.